Working Cows Podcast, Episode 30.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
This episode has been brought to you in part by Kamak Ranch Supply. Check out their website at KamakRanchSupply.com. This episode is also brought to you by ChrisWilliamsAudio.com. Head on over to ChrisWilliamsAudio.com for all your audio production needs. Well, I had a really neat opportunity. Corb Lund was coming through town, and I just reached out to him via Twitter and email, and I got an email right back from his people, and we got this all set up. So I went down to Hay Camp Brewing Company and recorded this live in their office. So there's a couple of phone ringings going on there. But without further ado, I want to get you right into this interview with Corb Lund. Corb, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows podcast. Really appreciate you taking the time out on the road to sit down and have a little chat.
Yeah, of course. Sorry I couldn't make it out to the place. They're just super slammed. This tour is crazy. The drives are long.
No worries. It's all good. Welcome to South Dakota, by the way. I don't know if you've been officially welcomed or not.
No, but it's funny, you know, because we've been playing music for years and touring the U.S., and I think there's only a handful of states we haven't played, and Hawaii and Alaska and Rhode Island are three, but strangely, South Dakota is one. It's a shame we've never been here sooner, but we are here now.
Yeah, no, it's good to have you. I think your stuff will resonate well here in Western South Dakota, especially lots of cow-calf producers here. So
yeah, it's funny because people ask me what I call the style of music, and you know, there's red dirt and outlaw country and underground and Americana and roots and all that. So I decided I to call mine agricultural tragic. That's my subgenre. Ag trag.
Yeah, for sure.
It's very narrow. I think it's just me, actually. But
that's good.
I have my own section in the record store, if there was still a record
that's
store.
That's right. You can top the charts every time. That's, you know, that I think one of the other, my other connections to your music is we took a continuing education class, and that's kind of how this podcast got started. Is an instructor encouraged somebody to start a podcast for ranchers, and he said, or he played S. Lazy H. for us one time during class, and he said the first time he heard it, he was teaching a class somewhere else, and he went in over lunch, and he was just cruising YouTube and found that song, and he said he's in there bawling his eyes out, you know, because that's what he does for a living.
Is, yeah.
Try to help avoid agricultural tragedy.
Estate planning is a big deal.
For sure.
Those old boys don't like to give up the reins. No, it's a big thing. I mean, that song is, people ask me if it's true. It's not literally true because it's an amalgam of three or four true stories that I've put together. But I mean, that stuff happens all the time.
Oh, yeah.
The SAZH is my buddy's brand. Actually, I've got a song called The Truck Got Stuck. And there's a guy in the song Holtman. He's my oldest friend, and that's his brand at the S. Lazy H. And he's got a sister that went out east to school and the whole bit. Although she's cool, we think.
so far, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I understand.
So you do tragic stuff. You know?
Yeah, it's tough, and those are hard conversations to have. I'm there myself, you know, and so far everybody's cool, everything's copacetic, but you know, money and land changes mine's pretty quick.
Yeah, it's got to be the parents have to take the reins early and say, this is what's going to happen, and to lay down the law and put it in paper and get everybody used to the idea. Because if you leave it and you leave it and you leave it, then it gets messy, huh?
Yeah.
That's my opinion, that's all, but it seems like that's the way to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's got to be from the top down, you know, as far as that process being initiated, because it's not going to work if it's tried to push from the bottom up.
Yeah, and a lot of times guys just leave it till they pass away, right? They just never think they're going to die, I guess, and they don't make any plans at all, and then it can get messy. And so there's always the one kid that just wants the money, right?
Yeah.
And then it's unsustainable, right?
Right. Yeah.
So you obviously are familiar with the agricultural industry and come from an agricultural background. How has that background served you as you have plugged away at your music career?
A couple of things come to mind. I think the farm boy work ethic thing comes into play. Because when you, in the music business, there's a few lucky people who get plucked out of obscurity and they put the whole media machine behind them and they're on TV and, you know. But then most of us just sort of, for most of us, it's either do it yourself or don't do it. So much like a ranch, you know, if you need to fix the truck and you're 100 miles away, you learn to fix the truck, right? And so, yeah, I've been my own publicist and booked my own shows and fixed my own van and printed my own T-shirts. I'm trying to delegate more and more of that away, but yeah, it's just like, I know a lot of people who get into the kind of radio trap where they're like, I want to do this, and then they find some person and tells them, well, just make a demo, and then we'll wait and see what happens. And they wait, and they wait, and they wait, and they wait 5 years, and they haven't done any music. So my approach has always been just like, roll up your sleeves and book some gigs and go do them. And it's been a very organic. It's kind of worked out because it's been a very grassroots, organic, loyal following that's been built up. But the other thing that's had an effect is the lyrical content, of course. Like, so my family is from Alberta, Canada, southern Alberta, and both sides came from Utah, and I think a few of them from northern Nevada. But they ranched down there for generations till the turn of the century, and they came up to Alberta around 1898-99, and ranched up there. My grandpas were the last generation that just had cattle. And even then, my grandma's taught school too, one-room schoolhouses, because you know how that goes. It's hard in the tough years. But my dad was a veterinarian. He had cows, but my grandpas are the last generations to have just cattle operations. And I don't have any animals because I'm on the road all the time. I was telling you earlier I can't even have a dog because I'm just gone all the time. But yeah, it's interesting because they immigrated, a lot of them, from Denmark in the 1840s. And it's interesting because my grandma's really into genealogy, and she found the record of my triple great grandfather Lund coming over from Denmark with purebred cattle. And apparently there was a book written about this voyage that she found somewhere, and there was a big storm at sea, and they had to throw everything overboard, including the cattle.
Oh wow!
To I guess I don't know much about naval stuff, but to keep the boat from going under. But I found that was kind of interesting because I guess the cows go back a long way.
Yeah, it's in the blood, right?
I just sing about them now.
Yeah.
Eat them and sing about them.
Yeah, yeah, it gets in your blood, that's for sure. You know, my own story is that I went away for a couple of years of Bible school, and I distinctly remember I was in Milwaukee going to Bible school, and I distinctly remember getting out of my car one time and in western South Dakota like, this isn't Milwaukee. This is, you know, fresh air that's been purified by growing grass and fast growing trees and all that stuff. And, just that whole, this whole ethic and lifestyle gets in your blood for sure. And so that's one of the reasons I so much appreciate your music, just because it's comes across as so authentic.
Yeah. Thanks. Well, it's I mean, I don't only write about that stuff, but a lot of it is rooted in family history and agricultural tragedies. Some light, some dark. It's funny because what's the name of the guy? I know his name. It's on the tip of my tongue. The guy who talks about non-arable land. The guy. Mm-hmm. What's his name? He gives lectures. He gives a TED talk.
Oh, Alan Savory.
Yeah, Savory, yeah. Like the rotational guy.
Yep.
That's interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And the fact that one of the arguments you hear a lot is that a lot of the Earth's surface would be better. Would be more efficiently producing if it was growing stuff, but they don't understand that 2/3 of the Earth's surface that's land is not arable, right?
Right.
And the only thing you can do with that is put animals on it, right?
Right.
Make it into any kind of food, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He's definitely a hero of mine and somebody that I've been, you know, trying to get all my hands on everything that he's produced. So that's kind of the line of thinking.
That whole buffalo theory, I mean, it makes perfect sense, right? That's
sure.
How those grasses evolved and along with the animals, right?
Yep. Yeah, and these...
Hit it hard, short, and come back a year later. You know?
Yep. Just moving through. Yeah, Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I had a guy on a while ago, Bob Kinford. I talked to him, and he talks about rebooting the herd instinct. That's his kind of his deal, rebooting the herd instinct. Kind of goes back to what we were talking about before we started recording about, you know, low-stress stockmanship, but then using that to reboot the herd instinct in these cows.
Meaning, what do you mean?
Getting them to graze like buffalo.
Oh, teaching them. How do you keep them away from the pond?
Away from the pond?
Yeah, yeah. That's always the thing, right?
They right. Just,
well, yeah. I guess some guys do the – they radiate in strips out from the water, right?
Yeah, and he's talking about horseback taking them out and leading them to new grass every 3 to 5 days. You know, okay. That's kind of how he's doing it. But just interesting how that those lines of thinking are starting to really, I think, have a lot of influence.
Well, there's been a lot of – I guess – I mean, there's been some social backlash with some of the more, you know, factory-style production, right?
Sure.
And I mean, personally, I like grass-fed beef myself. So
yeah.
But it's just, you know, it becomes an issue of scale. It's like there's 8 billion people, right? So it's the same as the, you know, Nike runners versus handmade boots, right? So like, are there enough resources for everybody to have handmade? I don't know.
Right.
So I don't really blame the people who are doing intensive production, because if we're going to feed that many people, we can do, right? I don't know. I think the question is, remains to be addressed whether or not what the sustainability levels of the planet are, right?
Sure.
And you got a billion Indian people and a billion Chinese people who are just realizing how we live now, and they all want cars and beef and wine and whiskey and cigars, and I don't know how that's going to turn out, but
right. No, you know, Joel Salatin is another guy kind of along the same lines of Alan Savory, who's doing a lot of thinking and talking about these things, and he said that's his favorite question is, can we feed the world? And he offers an argumentation that says we can with these practices, but ultimately the decision is going to be made by the bottom line on those issues.
Yeah.
Does the consumer demand non-factory raised animals? Does right. the consumer demand grass-fed beef?
So down here, what percentage would you say is of the, what percentage of people are aware of or care about that issue?
Not many.
Because I've thought about it's a narrow slice of people, because you got to have people that you got a lot of people who just eat and don't care at all. And then you've got people, a lot of people who are super aware of what they eat tend to be vegetarians. So it's a thin slice of people that A, care about what they eat, but B, still eat meat.
Right.
You know?
Yep. No, it is. And I was just talking to a guy the other day, Bob Howard. He said that's kind of what they've done. He's in Idaho, but they take their product, they raise grass-fed beef, they take their product north and west to Seattle, to Boise, to some of those. He said where a more concerned shopper is. He said it doesn't make him a better shopper. He was very politically correct about it, but he says it doesn't make him a better shopper. But where a more concerned shopper is, that is where they take their products.
Yeah, well, makes sense. I mean, there's an element of that in vegetable farming too now, right?
Right.
But it's kind of interesting because, I mean, I personally like the taste of free range beef better. So right. It's not only an ethical thing, I just like it better, right?
Yeah. So. Sure. Absolutely. So what is coming up for you? What do you have in your future?
I'm just starting. This is the second date of our Western US tour. We're touring basically all summer. And we play in Canada less than we used to because we do so – this is a good problem now, but we do well enough in Canada that we can only play a certain number – like. You get to Canada's not that big. It's only 30 million people, right? So you get to a point where there's only about 25, 30 cities you can play at the level we're at without stepping on the other. So it leaves us a lot of time. So we spend a lot of time touring America. We go overseas too, but
yeah.
But we're focusing a lot on the Western U.S. because yeah, I like playing anywhere down here, but the Western U.S. is where people really resonate with the lyrics that we're giving them.
Another friend of mine found out that I was interviewing you today, and he wanted to know where the German influence in some of the songs and titles comes from. Is that?
Well, the bike song, I have a German motorcycle song just because I like BMW bicycle, but motorcycles. It's an old brand that goes back to World War One. But and is there more German stuff? I can't remember. Oh, and that Berliner blues song. I spent a few months in Berlin writing the last record, and an old friend of mine from Alberta runs this old 120-year-old bar called the Berliner.
Ah,
so that's where that's from.
Gotcha.
I'm not German. I'm more Danish, actually. But
gotcha. Yeah. Are there any aspects of being home more that you miss, or any chores that you miss, especially connected to the cows?
Yeah, of course. Like a big, huge issue in my life is just time. And our summer's so short up there that, and it coincides with festival season. So I'm every day I can spend on the place at home, I do. And whenever I get a chance to work cows on horseback, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That's one of the most fun things you can do on a horse.
That's
not
one,
competitively, just real work.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the one that you want to do when you're home. If you're home at the right time.
Yeah, for sure. And we, my brother sometimes has some cows. My uncle's got some, and my dad's. We lost him a few years ago, so it's more of a peripheral drop in and help for fun thing. But
gotcha.
Get in on branding once in a while.
Yeah. How do you do it up there?
It depends. My cousins still like to rope them and drag them.
Yeah. We just branded.
A lot of Jack Mormons up there.
Yeah. We just branded the other day, and for the first time we used the table, but it was just, like we did it with 7 people. Usually it takes 40.
Yeah,
my mom didn't have to cook for an army.
depends how many. You guys probably have a lot more head going on than we do. So. But it's, I remember doing that from, that's one of the first skills I learned is get your knee in his neck, get your knee in his neck.
Yeah, we might not have more head. Maybe you just have better help. I don't know.
My dad was a large animal vet.
Yeah.
So I've got that song, the Talking Veterinarian Blues.
Uh-huh.
It's about all the gory stuff that you have to see way too early as a vet's kid.
Yeah, for sure.
Dad raised black Welsh cattle, Welsh blacks, and him and my uncle were the first ones to bring a bull over in the 60s from Wales, and they went over there. I think he was, everybody's trying to get in on the ground floor, the breeding stock and all that deal, right? But it didn't work out. But they were really actually pretty well suited to Canada because they calve real easy, and they've got some wool on them.
Sure. They're
like a Highland almost.
Right, a little longer hair.
Longer hair. Good for that climate. Huh? Here too, I guess. So.
Sure. Yeah. We're not too far. And 400 or 500 miles maybe from the Canadian border, I suppose. So what are you working on for the future? Are you working on anything?
Yeah, I'm always writing tunes. I'll play a new one in a minute here. But, yeah, I'm slowly working on a new record. I've got 8 records right now, so I'm not in a huge rush. I'm more interested in making a really good one than a quick one. So
sure.
So I'm writing, and I'm touring a lot, and that's what I do.
What's the songwriting process look like for you?
Songwriting for me usually is kind of a well, there's a spontaneous part to it, and then there's a work part. Spontaneous part, kind of any time during the day, I'll just get an idea, like a line that's catchy and kind of has a rhythm to it, a couple of lines, and then I'll just write them down on my notebook or record them, and then when I have time to sit down and work, I pull out some of those and just muck with them for a while. And some people sit down and write a song in the afternoon. I don't really work that way usually. I usually sit down and spend that same amount of time, but I chip away at 6 or 8 or 10 songs. So mine develop really slowly over time. And I find that my inner critic is satisfied more that way. Because if I write one all at once, 9 times out of 10, I come back and want to get under the hood and change it all up anyway. So I've learned not to force it. I've written songs that have taken me 3 or 4 years to write because I'll have a verse and a chorus and that's all, and I can't get it, and then one day it goes, boom, it's done. It just comes. I mean, there's still work involved, but if one's giving me trouble, I just move on to the next one.
Yeah.
Like cycle through them.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a pastor by trade. I don't know what my full-time job is anymore, but that's kind of what I do. And that's the same with writing sermons. It happens that way with me too.
I suppose. I think
there it is.
Any kind of writing, I think the important thing is to, because a lot of it comes to you when you least expect it, is to get in the habit of writing down those raw ideas. And then and then the perspiration part comes when you sit down and bang, hammer them into shape.
Huh? Absolutely. Yeah. I know the work. Yeah,
it's fun. One thing that's kind of neat is like we talked off mic a bit, but my audience is really diverse. It's interesting because I think probably roughly half of the audience is rural people who understand pretty clearly what I'm singing about. But the other half, we sort of fit into that underground country scene that I don't know how familiar you are with it, but there's a big bunch of guys from Texas that do it, and like the Turnpike Troubadours and Hayes Carl, and there's a whole great really vibrant underground country scene that's much more free and organic and honest and soulful than the radio stuff. And so half our audience are those people who might be from the city, or they might like Steve Earle, or so we have this interesting mix of people at the shows, half rural and half urban and everything in between, which I think is kind of, I'm proud of that actually, because it's good for people to, a lot of the division in politics these days is about rural urban, I think. And it's good for those people to mix with each other and see that things aren't so bad, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's like I said, the flyover states, you know, and it's just cool. You know, it is cool.
Well, it's funny because that term for me is like, I'm sure it's the same for you. It's almost offensive because to me, like, I've been trying to tour the Western states for years, and it's tough because most of the booking agents in the music business either put you on the coast or in Appalachia, you know, like around Tennessee and Georgia and Carolinas, which is okay, but my people are in the West, right? And most, probably to be fair, it probably makes sense because probably most bands don't view the Western states as a career path, but I mean, I do because I like Marty Robbins and Chris LeDoux, and I know that's my, I'm singing about that stuff. So for me, that is really important. And every time we come here, people love it. Not here in particular because we've never been to South Dakota, but in the West. The response is great, and every time we're like, why don't we do the more of this? So I've kind of rolled my sleeves up and involved myself a little more intimately with the booking process to make sure we played Texas and Oklahoma a ton, and that's great. We love those places, but we should also be playing the Dakotas and Idaho and Nevada and Northern California and Utah. And
Nebraska, Kansas.
I mean, I love playing New York City too. I like all of it, but it's important for me as just in my soul to play for Western people, but also I think for me, I think there's a big vacuum left where Chris LeDoux left off, because there's some people doing it, but there aren't really very many people writing with legit rural content in the music.
No, absolutely not. Even some of the Red Dirt or Alt Country or Cowpunk, whatever you want to call it, you know, they're not doing it.
Yeah, and a lot of that's great music, but it's not
no,
about
absolutely.
Those.
It's not my about, favorite music. It's
about those themes necessarily.
Yeah.
And I was surprised when I went to – I spent a ton of time in Texas. I lived in Austin a few different times, and I thought when I first went to Austin from Canada, I thought there would be people singing Western swing on every corner, and but it wasn't. It was more like modern underground country, which is cool, but I know a few guys who sing cowboy stuff, but not many.
Yeah. Did you listen to the Cocaine and Rhinestones podcast at all?
Yeah.
That was so great, wasn't it?
Yeah, I've listened to. No, I haven't got through all of them, but I really, really like the Bobby Gentry one.
Yeah,
I'm a huge Bobby Gentry fan.
Yeah, yeah.
That's David Allan Coe's son, eh? Do you know that?
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Yeah, he talks a little bit about it in a couple episodes, and he's like, "I'll mention my dad when it's necessary." But yeah, no, it's. I think he. I don't know if there's angst there or if it's more of a I want to be known for what I create kind of a thing.
Well, I think that's a tough position. That's a tough road to hoe. It has advantages and disadvantages because you can get doors opened from the family legacy, but then you're faced with the challenge of staking your own claim too, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and you never know if it was your effort or your dad's effort that got you.
Yeah, I think the trick is to take, if you've got that advantage, take it, but then work just as hard to do your own thing.
Yep. Right? For sure.
It's interesting about the rural lyrical content. One of the gigs that we do pretty regularly that's kind of neat is the Elko, Nevada National Cowboy Poetry Gathering and a few similar events. But those are kind of neat because that's all they do is you know, cowboy stuff.
Right.
Yeah. My songs are strange because I have one foot in a really traditional Western-y cowboy kind of place, but the other foot is totally not.
Right. Yeah. So you've got Cows Around in Sauter City. Is that kind of the...
Yeah, or if I do write Western songs, sometimes there's a kind of a twist to it. Like, not really... Like, I love Hank Williams, and I love Western, I love Wolf Carter and Marty and all those guys, but I don't, you know, enshrine them. Like, I'm not afraid to fool with it. Like, I like to take some of that stuff and then mix it with a good dose of irreverence too, you know?
Yeah, no, totally. Because
you got to do that to get your own sound, right?
It's got to be yours, and it'll get stale if you're just, you know, perpetuating what's mainstream already.
And it's a I think probably what happened with me is I grew up pretty Western. And then when I was about 15, I got into rock and roll. And I had a rock band for 8 or 10 years. And it was a real indie underground kind of punk rock thing. And in that scene, you're encouraged to be as unique and different as you can, which is almost the opposite of some of the country genre, right? And yeah. So I think that my upbringing on one hand combined with that kind of approaching music with abandon it is what gave me the style that I have at this point. If it's, and I think any quirkiness or unusual qualities can be attributed to that. But I like it that way. I'm never going to be Garth Brooks, but that's okay. Like people that like my stuff really seem to like it.
Yeah,
because it's, I mean, and it's never going to appeal to everybody, but I think it's got an appeal to certain people, and there'll be, and it creates a loyal listener too.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's like, I can like Garth Brooks among other acts, but being unique, you're liked kind of as your own thing, you know, because you are unique, I think.
Yeah. You know what's funny about Garth is when he was contemporary, I didn't really like him much because I was into George Jones and Willie and all the old stuff. But now I hear Garth, and I'll take Garth all day compared to what's going on. You know?
Like, oh, man, don't get me started, man.
Fiddle in there.
Yeah.
He's singing about cowboys sometimes, right?
Right. Yeah. No, I didn't listen to radio much. I didn't listen to music hardly at all for a long time. And then I found Outlaw Country, which is where I found you and Hayes Carl and some of the other guys you mentioned. And then I just, you know, then I went to Pandora and I started typing those in and opened up a world.
Well, that's pretty helpful because I've been doing indie music my whole life, like do-it-yourself underground music of one stripe or another my whole life. But for sure, in the last 10 years, it's become much more, there are way better tools available to, because a lot of times, you know, before the internet, people could listen to the radio station, the rock station, the country station, and then they got kids and a job, and there's always a few of us that are obsessed with music, and we would dig around and find the interesting stuff. But the average person's busy, and they got a life to lead. They don't have time for that, and so they would play either the rock station or the country station. End of story. And fair enough.
Yep.
But now it's much easier for the average person just to go down the rabbit hole and find stuff they really like that really suits them, right?
As far as I understand it, too, radio has changed, right? I mean, like back in the day, DJs had control.
Yeah, it's become very...
They've got a playlist now.
Centralized, yeah. But they're losing ground, like...
Oh, yeah.
Their hold on... It's like network TV. It's just slipping all the way from under the
Netflix.
Fingers.
You know, people want to watch what they want, when they want. They won't have to have an appointment with the radio station or the TV to come home and listen when I have to.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I don't want to keep you any longer than I said I would. I appreciate your time today, and I thank you for the opportunity to sit down. I've got time to hear a new tune if you want.
This one's about my friend Jada. Had the idea. I grab my pick. I have a friend named Jada. It's her idea, and then we fleshed it out. It's a duet between a man and a woman. It's about how, when, I'm not sure if this is a thing in Dakota, but it's about where the lady spends all the man's money on horses. It's a duet. I have to sing both parts, but one's a man's part, one's a lady's part. Folks think you're rich when they see you have horses. Well, that might be true if my income sources were eating up every month on the boardage for all of our four-legged friends. My accountant says that my funds are depleted, but I keep my wealth right where I can see it, in pastures and barns and in show arenas, and because of the money she spends. We're horse poor, horse poor, I say once she buys two more, the luxuries we could afford, if we was rich and not horse poor. Here's the lady's part. He must have forgot the show where he met me. He said the way I sat, my saddle was sexy. He said a cowgirl like me was worth every penny. Better start making sense now, my dear. You can build me a barn and it better be heated with a whole lot of stalls and hire some kid to clean it. Buy me a stud and smile when you feed it, because we're just getting started around here. We're horse poor, horse poor. I sell once, you buy three more. Luxuries we could afford if we was rich and not horse poor. By the power that's vested in me by the ponies, you should be saddled in this matrimony. And I now pronounce you man, wife, and horses. You may kiss all your money goodbye. Horse poor, horse poor. I sell one, she buys four more. Luxuries we could afford. If we was rich and not horse poor. Horse poor, horse poor. I sell one, she buys four more. Luxuries we could afford. If we was rich and not horse poor.
Yeehaw. Absolutely, that resonates in Western South Dakota. It also resonates in Western Montana or Western Minnesota, right?
I didn't want to start anything between you two.
No, that's where her sister's from. Okay. So we'll start something between her husband, who's a listener.
That's another classic agricultural tragic number.
Yes, that's awesome. Well, Corb, thank you for sitting down with me. This will come out in a couple of weeks.
Send us a link and we'll.
Sure. Anything I can direct the people to as far as links or...
I'm pretty easy to find. It's Corb Lund. So, yeah, my name's kind of funny. It's Corb, C-O-R-B, Lund, L-U-N-D. So that's the name of the act, and it's my name also. So we're on YouTube, and we're on Spotify, and we're on Instagram and all that stuff.
It's handy for being able to find you on social media, right?
Yeah. My name's funny because if your name is, Cody Johnson, it's pretty clear, right? But Corb Lund is like, it's a bit mumbly if you're in a loud bar. But once you get it, I like the name. It's unique. But once you get it, it's cool. But it's a bit hard to convey to people. So I used to have a banner so that I would hit them over the head with the banner all night.
Corb, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
The High Plains Ranch Practicum is an invaluable resource. I cannot stress highly enough how much I think it is important for producers to be involved in continuing education programs. So go check out the High Plains Ranch Practicum at hpranchpracticum.com and register. The class that I was a part of sold out before the deadline, and so the deadline is the end of May. But go ahead and register early and make plans to be a part of this. Just a great format for continuing education for ranchers. hpranchpracticum.com, our newest sponsor on the Working Cows podcast.
Well, I really appreciate Corb being so generous with his time and just taking time to share that new music with us and share some of his background and some of his thoughts about the music industry and the ranching industry and all that stuff. So thank you so much for tuning in this week. I would invite you to come back next week for an episode with Derek Schwanebeck talking about continuing education. And we will see you next week on the Working Cows podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.